Accession number 7480, room number 4.
Mr. Jeffrey, rear 4. Yes, you mentioned that you were very tired.
Yes. It's one of those things. I mean, you're much younger than you are, and you keep going. You've got to do.
And just before the ship was sailing to East Coast,
yeah,
what was the morale like on board?
Oh, when we were going up towards the East Coast, when we was in the convoy with the 8 armies, that was quite all right. We was all busy doing our jobs and looking after and whatever we were doing there. That was quite all right. It's only when we realised that we were so close to the Malayan coast, going up the Malayan coast, there that we could be blown out of the water by aircraft, which we were. That there was a lot of chewing and a lot of carrying on, grumbling and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. There again, you see, when you're in the service, you're not allowed to grumble, really.
But then was the morale high enough to prepare for the war?
Oh, yes. Yes, see, they all went into it. We didn't know what it was going to be. We didn't think it was going to be so devastating, but we did expect to get knocked about a bit there by aircraft. But it's like the remainder when I was on the Elestris, you see, during the war, second half of the war, when we was attacked sometimes 2 or 3 times a day, you see. But we had our own aircraft and we had radar. We was able to send the aircraft out to meet the aircraft, enemy aircraft coming in, and those that got through, then our aircraft kept clear of the vicinity of the ships, and we took over. And what was left up there, we usually knocked down. By that time, things had altered. We just hadn't got the old grid type of sights on the guns, on the close range. We had gyroscopic sights, which moved with the roll of the ship and all like that, and gave you your aim off and everything like that. All you had to do was start up, you started a gyro up on the, and just put the spot in the centre of the screen on the aircraft, and it would hit it.
Mm-hmm. But then on the repulse?
Well, on the repulse, you see, we didn't have that. We hadn't got that far. That's what I say, you see. They'd made aircraft bigger and better, faster, but they hadn't done anything about the anti-aircraft. The Admiralty, it boils down to, and we all know it, there was the fact that they believe that aircraft couldn't damage a ship. But it was definitely proved that day that they could have wiped an old fleet up nearly. I keep pouring aircraft in, as long as you don't mind losing a few aircraft.
Can you describe the fighting spirit on the repulse during the attack? The fighting spirit amongst the crews?
The fighting spirit? Well, everybody did his job. Everybody knew that he did his job, that he'd go down all the quicker. We knew in the end we'd be very lucky. We knew jolly well we'd have to turn back after that lot anyway. When we had the 2 bombs on board there, we knew that as far as if there was a convoy, enemy convoy coming down, that we couldn't engage them, because it was already damaged inside. That was a thing. Mm-hmm. They got the first blow in. Mm-hmm. And a good one at that too. And I often think, and I've talked to other people about it, And we always think that we was, we sort of run in a trap up there. We always very much doubtful if there was an enemy convoy coming down, invasion force coming down. We know that it was invaded sooner or later, but they could come down the centre of Malaya, you see, without bothering about the sea, which they did, and across the George Straits there. But we wondered if we were just caught out by the Japanese, because once the Japanese knew we'd come to go up there, they flew all the aircraft available, what they wanted, onto the Malayan coast, there, and they only had to, and the ammunition and that, and they only had to keep loading up with the bombs, flying a few hundred miles there, and then back again, loading up again, and that's how they could have gone on all day. But we couldn't. We'd soon run out of ammunition, because most of our ammunition consists of 15-inch shells weighing a ton each. They're made for surface firing, not for anti-aircraft guns. But I often thought, though, all those 15-inch shells that went to the bottom in the reports there, had they loaded the guns there and fired the 15-inch guns towards the Japanese torpedo bombers, which had to come right down towards nearly to water level there to drop their torpedoes, the blast alone from those guns and that there would have upset the torpedo bombers, and they certainly wouldn't have been able to come in, drop their torpedoes and fly away again.
But then why didn't it take place?
Why do what?
Why didn't they use the 15-inch gun, 15 inches?
I say they could have used the 15-inch gun by throwing some of those shells at them. Mind you, when I say a gun will only hold, elevate 23 and a half degrees, which is only about like that, but that shell, 15-inch shell, will go 20 miles at that elevation, you see, gradually going up and then falling down on its trajectory. You see, it goes on a trajectory like that. There. But if they'd have fired some of those shells at those guns, at least it would have, in my mind, would have caused chaos amongst the Japanese aircraft, and that's what we wanted, and that's what we hadn't got. Although we shot quite a few down. Mm-hmm. There. They were meant to hit a ship, go inside, you see, cut its way inside, and then explode. You see, with an anti-aircraft gun, there they have a fuse. If it's a high-angle gun, you set the fuse so as during its time of flight, that fuse explodes at a certain time, and it should be in amongst the aircraft then. It's all worked out for them. But they don't have those sort of fuses on a 15-inch. It just bursts on point of impact. Understand?
You did actually have a 15-inch shells on board, but...
Well, we had...
You did not use it. I mean,
we had hundreds of 15-inch shells on board. Mostly our magazines was full up of that type of stuff, shells and that. We didn't have all that much anti-aircraft stuff. And that was one of the reasons why we were run out, you see, really. I don't know exactly when we run out or anything, but I know it was getting very low anyway. Even if we'd have driven the Japanese aircraft off, we'd have had to turn back and gone back to Singapore.
But so at that time, nobody thought of using...
No. I mean, we didn't quite... It did go through... our minds, and I did We did have a couple of, one or two of us discussed it while we had a chance there, but we didn't understand why. We just thought it was a method of helping to break them up a little bit.
But I suppose at that time you had a commando to control the...
We had an admiral on board.
I mean, an other ranking officer as well?
Oh, we had a gunnery officer and all like that. But you see, it all boils down to the fact that this was the first real major attack by waves and waves of aircraft that the Navy have ever met. And I don't know whether they learnt anything more about it. It was a funny thing, although we and I saw a lot of that action, there was nobody asked me about it afterwards. I wasn't quizzed or anything, and there's one or two things that I could have told them.
You mean after the action?
Yes, when we mustered in Singapore. Of course, a lot of them went to different ships. A lot of them got sunk again and got killed there. Because I was told in Singapore there was 900 and something. In the one paper I read, it said there was nearly 600 there, but there was a jolly sight more. If you'd have seen the small group that was left out of the old ship's company on the Singapore parade, then you realise what the casualties were. Of course, the only thing is, like officers and that, you see, they didn't muster in on the parade, only one or two. Where they went to, I don't know.
Did any one of your crew die in this action?
Die?
Any one of your crew members?
You mean any of the ordnance staff?
Yes.
The ordnance staff, the walking party, waiting for to come up to carry out repairs and things like that, was down below, down towards the bowels of the ship. They're in a compartment which had breech blocks and every spare imaginable for all this equipment there, and they'd be inside there. And when those shells and when the bombs and torpedoes went inside like that there, it's just just a tomb, that's all. If they didn't get blown up there and then and drowned, they would have got most of them would have got killed by the spare parts and all like that falling on them, and some of the parts weighed tons.
So when you got back to Singapore, did you see any of them?
I did not see above I suppose of our staff no more than about half a dozen.
About half a dozen?
Yes, there was one. We had two chief OAs on board then. One was killed in the with the working party, and the other one was named Jock McLean, who lived on one of the Stowaway or something somewhere up Scotland. There, and a very nice chap. He got away with it too. But there was only one or two that I know. I don't think there was any more than about six, maybe seven of us out of the staff. Most of the qualified ordnance, beside the ordnance artificers, was all killed. I was lucky because I was on the upper deck there.
Were you there because you were required to?
I was there. That was my action stations there, was to see that everything was working properly and to act on it when anything went wrong. Well, I did send down for help, but no help arrived. So they had to carry out on their own.
Why there were no help? Where were the people?
Well, they may have been killed, you see, by... You see, where they were, there were two different working parties, where they were stationed. They may have got killed by the first lot of bombs, or... You see, when something explodes inside a ship, and the ship's on fire and all like that, that puts paid to all those sort of things. You see, bombs dropping alongside, even on the water, exploding on the water there alongside. This shrapnel, bomb blowing to pieces, often go through a ship's side. And with this here big battle cruiser, which was not heavily armoured, the idea of a battle cruiser was it was faster than anything of its size. Somewhere quite a... I think it could reach up to about 40 knots or something. There was to go in with the hitting power of a battleship, there, turn around and come out again, there, in a naval engagement, surface engagement, there. But with a battleship, she was armoured over most of the places. You see, our engine rooms and all like that, although they had torpedo bilges on, which didn't appear to be any use. I don't know whether they were or not, but they certainly didn't stop the torpedoes from going inboard. There, well, that theory didn't work anyway, and there's only thick armour plating, like they put on the big ships, like the Prince of Wales and that. And it rather surprises me, really, as the Prince of Wales caught it up like they did, because they were sent just the same as what we were. And, of course, they picked on us first, and then attacked, saw what they'd done to us, and attacked the Prince of Wales, and sunk her too. But she went down with a destroyer alongside, either side, they took off the men. There, all jumped aboard the destroyer, very few in the water. Not like us. We had a very long time in the water, I'm afraid. But we're still here. Right, anything else?
Yes, then when the power failure after the ship was hit,
now, when the ship goes into action, all dead light, that's the steel plate, the plates that fit over the portholes, are all closed down and screwed down. So consequently, no daylight comes into the ship. There, once the main power, or the generators are hit, or the power supply is cut off in the different lines and that, the ship goes pitch black. It's like being down a mine. There are auxiliary lighting, which comes on, and they're battery, small batteries, and they put small light. But it just depends how they went on, because once you get blast inside a ship like that, and the pressure's terrific, there, all sorts of things get knocked about. Anyway, it was jet black, and it was jet black when I came out of that. That I came out of that sponson. I'd practiced it beforehand. I knew where I was going. Well, when I was going out, when I left England, although I passed my swimming test in the Navy when I first joined, there, whenever we got an opportunity, I used to go swimming there in the sea, often in the sea, like, you know, miles from anywhere, if we had a chance to stop. Sometimes we had to swim right round the ship, which was an awful long way, with these ear life belts on, practice. And I used to practice, and I kept it up, and it paid dividend. I did hear of chaps. Well, there was a lot of brave things done, and I did hear some chaps losing their heads there. I did hear of one chap that was charging the bulkhead with his head, trying to break through. It's that sort of thing when they're trapped is a funny thing, especially when they know they can't get out.
So when the supply of power was cut off, were the guns on the upper deck still?
Oh, the Pompon Mountains there, although they weren't like the Pompon Mountains later on, which was operated by hydraulics, and a joystick control. These were trained round by hand and elevated by hand, and the firing mechanism there was operated by hand. So they could put them into hand or power there, and you could switch to hand operation and operate them. But it got to the stage, you see, when the ships started to list on one side, they could no longer be operated because you couldn't train the mountain round, because the list of the ship and the weight of it, it just wouldn't go.
Then before you jumped into the water, you did not blow your life belt. Why didn't you?
No. Well, you see, if you wear a life belt there, actually, and you jump into the water, you can turn upside down. And once you turn upside down there, you can, so I'm told anyway, get a bit of a job to right yourself again. So the idea is to jump into the water there. When you come up, pull the tube out, and that's what it's there for, tucked away there. You just lay on your back or tread water, put it under the top, blow it up the best you can, and by that time we was a bit out of breath too, puff there, so we couldn't do it 100%. Although my life belt would nearly support me, it didn't support me fully. It couldn't. I had to keep moving me arms or legs there. It didn't. I didn't get it fully blown up, and I wouldn't risk on doing it and blowing it up anymore. And I'd, as a matter of fact, I forgot all about it. Yeah.
But there were other people who blow their life belt before they jumped into the water.
Yes, but you're not really supposed to. They're only about that diameter, there, and they just fit round your flat like an inner tube, there with a long tube. And they have canvas straps over your shoulders, like one fastened round your waist. But if you've got it partly, if you've got it blown up, and you dive in or you hit the water, it can force the life belt down there. And once you get below halfway, you're upside down, and there's no escape.
So when you got back to Singapore, was there much discussions among the crews?
When we got back to Singapore, there was quite a bit of a discussion amongst the crews when we was on the parade ground waiting for our names being called out. There was a lot of things that we didn't like, that we found out didn't work out as they thought. In the first place, there we were definitely sure that Churchill should have never sent us up there. Secondly, he should have waited until we had our twin 4-5 turrets, which was on the Dutch side at Rosyth when we was there, and I actually witnessed them with one or two more of the OAs, and we went and had a look at them, and they were marked up, painted on HMS Repulse there. But Churchill wouldn't allow us time to have them put in. It may have taken a month or two there, but at least he would have had the ships again there, but he couldn't, because he sunk them straight away. He wanted to make a show because things weren't going too well. It wasn't going too well for him. And what he wanted to do was send us up there, and he thought we were going to do this, we were going to do that. We just hadn't the stuff to do it with. It's not like the army. When you're on a ship and you're getting hammered like that, there you've nowhere to go. The army do dig in or something like that, or move away, but we can't. And you can't move away like that because aircraft is much as the speed much greater than what you are. I mean, you can't just raise steam at that particular moment. To get full speed out on the repulse, you'd have to have practically all the 42 boilers going. They're hard at it. It just depends on your steam pressure. There's a lot of things, you see, and of course the condition of the sea and which way the wind's blowing and all those sort of things.
Did it matter which directions the wind was blowing?
Well, it depends entirely on the people on the bridge, which way they were steaming. They were doing the best to dodge the bombs for a start by zigzagging there. But you see, they was able, the grouping of the aircraft, tight grouping, like a ball, big ball up in the sky, these aircraft there, and they all got within the bomb sight on the target, which was us there, and they all let go their bombs there, a chance to sense he had. It was a very good chance of one or two bombs hitting it, and that's all that had to happen. Although we had, in the Illustrious during the war there, the Illustrious had 5 bombs, I think, through her flight deck into the hangar by dive bombers there. But we was able to keep going.
But then why didn't you have the air cover by
that's what we never understood, you see. They had it into their heads that warships, aircraft couldn't sink battleships, but they were soon proved wrong. And we knew, and I knew, and I can easily say this afterwards there, but I'd watched with the close range, the pom-poms and that, doing practice shoots at drogues and that there. And you can't, once an aircraft comes in fast, you can't follow it with those sort of things, heavy mountains. You can't get them round quick enough. Then again, once you get them round there, there's always a little time elapsed before the shell gets up there. And often by the time the shell gets up there, if you've not got the correct aim off, the aircraft's gone through that area and on the way, according to his speed. All that sort of work is...